Welcome to AC Presents. I'm Alex.
I'm Jared.
I'm Laura.
And we are back about a week later than what we planned on originally. But to be fair, I did say barring any complications, and there was a complication.
Yeah, I have no idea what day it is. That's a complication.
I mean, that's a complication, I guess, from a certain point of view. Some housekeeping before we get started. Sorry if you hear extra yapping in the background. We got a new dog. Yep. So
his name is Stanley.
Or Stanley or Stan. Depends on how fast you say it. But in honor of Stan Lee and comic books. And as my mom came up with the idea for the name, we're like, that's a pretty good name.
And the dog does kind of look like a Stan Lee.
He's got the white hair, kind of unkempt, like older Stan Lee. Like.
Yeah, our neighbor next door said, when you come across a name, you'll know. And once that hit, we're like, absolutely right. Yeah,
that was a good one.
That's the one.
So yeah, we rescued him yesterday. We'll talk about more of that later, but... If you hear noise in the background, I know I can hear him right now.
He misses us.
He is not crate trained yet, so he is very unhappy that he's in the crate right now. But we don't trust him to not torment the cats and the rest of the house. So he's just locked up a little bit right now.
Yep. But he's safe. He has food and water and safe things and toys.
Yes. So
he's good. Yeah, he's just not happy.
He misses us is the biggest thing. But it is what it is. And we miss you, our dedicated listeners. So that's why we're back and we're doing this again. Mm-hmm. It's been a long 3 weeks. So, and of course, I waited until today to finish reading everything because
I didn't even finish.
Hey, well, there you go. But we do have a topic. Laura came up with the subject for this.
Sons.
First subject.
Or I guess children.
Children, yeah.
Yeah. There was an issue of Star Trek, Sons of Star Trek. And that made me think, oh, yeah, other sons in comic books or also, like, I don't know who picked daughters.
I did daughters.
Okay, yeah. Any child of a superhero-ish.
I think I actually did mostly sons. So.
Okay. Yeah, I know I did too. So
I got the children part.
Yeah. I have some daughters, but either way, Jared, I see you family. Have your very complicated notes printed out that are definitely not a copy off of Wikipedia.
Nope. Not at all.
So why don't you kick us off with your first one on your list?
All right. I went with Earth 2, Helena Wayne. She's the daughter of Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle from Earth 2, not your main DC universe or DC continuity Earth, whatever.
It's very weird phrasing.
So it's the Infinite Crisis stuff.
They need a true number, like how Marvel has 616 for comics.
This is Earth 2.
But I'm saying for
Earth 1. But
I mean, is that... anything, because they've reset Earth 1 however many times. Like, they need to actually... Okay, this is...
And then Helena Wayne was on Earth 1 for a little bit. I don't remember how that came to be. If there was, like, a portal and she got there or what. But that's here nor there. But I kind of went with the classic Helena Wayne. She was educated, well-trained. She grew up rich. She found out that her mom and dad were Batman and Catwoman. And... thought that was great and everything. She looked up to Dick Grayson, who was Robin. She loved Alfred like a second father. But she went to law school, and she joined the firm of Cranston and Grayson, who Dick Grayson was one of the partners in that law firm. So he was a lawyer in that Earth. But a criminal had blackmailed Selina Kyle into becoming Catwoman again, and this led to Selina's death. So she decided to bring the criminal to justice and created a costume for herself and then went out and brought him to justice. So from there, she's like, I'm going to keep doing this. And she named herself the Huntress at that time. So, she then, moved out of Wayne Manor and everything and into Gotham City, where she actually joined the Justice Society of America, which her father was in. Earth 2, there wasn't a Justice League, there was a Justice Society. But she died in Crisis on Infinite Earths, along with Robin from... they were saving children from the Anti-Monitor's shadow demons. She did return during Infinite Crisis, but later they were rebooted in the New 52, and she was Robin to Batman in that universe, and Dick Grayson didn't exist, or... she was the only Robin. There was no Jason Todd or Damian Wayne or Tim Drake or anything. So she, during New 52, they had, I don't remember that fully, and I didn't go that far into it since I tried to stick to the classic story, but I believe the Justice Society had been killed, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, and her and Supergirl escaped, where she later became Huntress and Power Girl, I think, to the main Earth universe, Earth One. So, but I didn't go too far into that, but I always liked Helena Wayne versus the Earth One Huntress of Helena Bertinelli, the mobster's daughter. Both have merits. I always liked the daughter of Batman and Selina Kyle over the mobster's kid.
The family connection versus some random. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Not that the other one, the other one's really good. Don't get me wrong. I like both, but I just kind of prefer the daughter.
Yeah, it's just a tightly knit story that way.
Yep.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. First one on my list, I'm going to do a twofer. When you said the sons or children of superheroes, I immediately went to the DC Super Sons. John and Damian. John Wayne. John Kent and Damian Wayne. The Super Sons series they did was so good.
It was good. It was fun.
I forget who wrote it, but it was
a 12-issue maxi series to start out, wasn't it?
It might have been longer.
I think it did so well that they turned it into an ongoing.
That could have been it.
Something like that.
Yeah, and they've done it twice, I think, including once they aged up John a little bit. Well, a lot. Made him like
an adult.
I mean,
18, 16. Yeah. From a 10-year-old.
Right. So he's not the same age of Damian anymore, where he's older. Now, since then, Damian's a little bit older now. He's 13 now, I think. 13 or 14.
Yeah.
So they've aged him up naturally versus they sped up aged John. But that series was so good. And anytime I see them interact together, it just works so well. Because it is truly the son of Batman and the son of Superman.
Yeah.
Where they have the same personalities as their parents, as their fathers. But also in the new modern era. So like, oh, I see your flaws. I'm not going to repeat that same thing.
Yeah.
I'll make my own mistakes differently.
Right.
Yeah, they did recently. John had his own story, written by Tom Taylor. The Superman son of Kal-El, because at that point, Superman Kal-El was off Earth, no longer Superman, or something, I don't know. I wasn't reading Action Comics, so I don't know what's going on. But John was over as Superman, and it was so good. Really, again, anything Tom Taylor, always gold.
Yeah.
And currently with Damian, the Batman and Robin series, I've really enjoyed that dynamic of, which I always loved the Damian Bruce dynamic, and I hated when they, Batman versus Robin, they're on the outs, they're not going to interact with each other, like,
if you liked that, I think you would like when Bruce was, quote, dead and Dick Grayson was Batman. So Damian was first Robin to Dick Grayson.
Right.
There was gold there because Dick Grayson still had his Dick Grayson personality. Damian had Bruce's personality. So it was
role reversal.
Just a role reversal. And there was a lot of fun stuff. Yeah. And Dick Grayson was constantly going to Alfred for, how do you do this? He's driving me nuts.
How do you raise this kid? Yeah. I don't know.
So... But you should go back and do some of that. I think it was done by Scott Williams.
Okay.
And I think Grant Morrison did some too, which I'm not a fan of his, but he did good work there.
So I'm hearing that should be one of the next books of the book club books.
But the current series of Batman and Robin, I think it's Josh Williamson is the writer. I think that's his first name is Josh.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, Joshua Williamson. And
Simone DeMio
as the artist and cover artist. And the art on this series has been wonderful.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed all of it. It's very...
Not quite anime or...
It's Western manga.
But
Western
it's,
anime, I would say.
Yeah, more Western manga stuff.
Kind of not dissimilar from the Avatar series on Nickelodeon.
Yes. Yeah.
Where it's cartoony, but not completely. I mean, the cover... I mean, that is definitely a anime manga cover with... Just Damian, his nose, you can tell. Yeah. That's very...
Right. I think it's style. The nose and some of the eyes.
Yeah.
But I love the color schemes in these books.
And it's just like, the adventures overall have been really good. I mean, this is issue 7 that just came out this week. Not one of my picks of the week, but it is worth mentioning because of the subject. And the first 6, I loved it because the dynamic between Bruce and Damian, Bruce is like, okay, you've been trained by the Assassin's Guilds and all this, but you've never had a real... social life of a normal thing. So I'm putting you in high school at Gotham University High School.
It was a public school too, wasn't it?
I don't remember if it was public or private.
I can't remember. I was thinking he went, sent him to public school.
Yeah, I'm not
positive. But I can't remember for sure.
And of course, Damien's like, this is childish. Like, how fast I grew up with my life, I don't need this. And of course, something got him hooked in where he's like, okay, I'll stay for X, Y, and Z. But I think he's going to really appreciate it eventually.
Yeah.
But it's just been this really cool dynamic of Bruce actually trying to be like, okay, I need to not be Batman. I need to actually be Bruce, and you need to have some sort of normal life since Alfred's not around anymore. And I think this is something Alfred would want for an option to go to school because, I mean, really, once Thomas and Martha died, Bruce didn't go to school anymore either at that point, from what I can tell, for the most part.
I think for the most part, I think he still had the private schools, but
right, he's a very not
social,
very school. Early Batman where he's
yeah.
Like, just, I'm getting through this just so I can do my own
right.
Revenge sweat oath thing. But it's really cool to see Damien in school, especially when he tried out for the sports teams. Like, oh, crap, he's really good. I'm like, oh, yeah, his assassin skills translated over, and
right.
It just works really well.
Star athlete.
Right. So I really enjoyed that series. And just, again, the dynamic between Bruce and Damien. Because, yes, Bruce and Dick Grayson, like, it's the dark versus the light.
Right. They're always together. This is both dark and...
And Bruce, okay, I need to bring, not always be so dark and broody. I need yep. to, because I need to have the Alfred influence on him, and Alfred's not around, so it has to be me now. And it's just, it's really well done. So I like Bruce owning up and being more of a father, not just a superhero with sidekick.
Yeah.
So,
Alfred can raise you as your other person. I'm going to train you to be the superhero.
Right. And he's trying to truly find the balance in yeah. that now. And it's just, it's a really good. I like them bringing that out with them. Plus, Robin by himself is fine. You can do mini stories, but we need to always have a Batman and Robin series running because it's so good. Laura, what is first on your list?
The inspiration for this was the Star Trek issue that came out this week. Look up the name. Nope, not on that page. Sons of Star Trek, number one. That one made me think, oh, yeah. Characters who have sons or daughters. But anyway, so the main character to me in this issue was Nog, who is a Ferengi from Star Trek. And I admit, I feel a little bad because after I suggested this, I realized, oh, technically this is a TV show that I'm going to give most of the history of Nog from. But he's in a comic book now. So
there you go.
Adjacent. Yeah,
it works.
It's good enough to talk about.
It's a book that's on the shelves now so that you yeah. guys can order.
Yeah, and hopefully, like, I feel like we should have enough nerds around that y'all like Star Trek, right? Yeah. And I've been told by a lot of people that Deep Space Nine is one of their favorite of the Star Trek genres. I guess it's not really a genre, but the spin-offs, that sort of thing. Like, a lot of people think that Deep Space Nine was a great story unto itself. And it really was. It's one of the... Actually, it's the only Star Trek series I've watched all the way through because it was on Netflix or something like that. But anyways, one thing that I remember about Nog is he's like a second generation underdog. Like his dad, Rom, was always like being talked down upon by all of his other family and Ferengi friends. The main character that you might know best is Quark, who ran the bar at Deep Space Nine. And I feel like he was in... The Next Generation as a fairly main character, but I forget if he also ran a bar there or what all he did. I love how everyone's looking at me here like, I know nothing about Star Trek.
I've watched some of the movies with you.
Yep.
I watched the original series, could never get into Next Generation, just never did get into the others. So
yeah, that's fair.
And now it's all streaming on Paramount Plus and that service sucks.
Yeah, it is rough. I can't believe, like, it's been about 15 years I've been watching things on CBS.com/Paramount Plus, and they all have the same issue. Like, you go to an advertisement, and it, like, locks up the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well, why?
Or it does do all the ads, then it goes back to the previous commercial break before. Like, well, I watch that, and then you have to fast forward. It's,
yeah. Anyways.
fix yourself, Paramount.
Yeah. Yeah. After 15 years, get it together. But yeah, anyways, shoot, I forget where I was. Oh, I also wanted to throw in when you said, oh, I've kind of made you watch Star Trek. Someone, not naming any names, suggested that that's a form of spousal abuse, making you watch Star Trek, the motion picture.
The first one.
Yeah, the first one. Which I can see it a little bit, but I'd like to caveat that at the time, I think I told you, you can do something else. I just want it running in the background, and you're going to absorb it.
I was organizing my Dice Masters while it was on.
Yeah, you don't have to watch it, because not a lot happens.
I mean, I still got it. I still got the point.
It takes them, 20 minutes to get to the ship at one point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very cinematic experience, like... overdone, drawn out pauses, like, oh, to show off the magnificence of this.
Yeah, because at the time, that was a big deal. Like, that was one of the first big movies, and the story sucked. Yeah. But so, yeah, you can not really pay attention. If something happens, I'll fill you in later. Like, the biggest thing is V'ger. Learn what V'ger is, you're good. You know the whole story. But yeah, so anyways, going back, eventually... The Star Trek folk find the Ferengi. The Ferengi are all about making money, except, kinda, Rom and Nog. And Nog is like, I don't want to just be out here to make money, which is really odd for a Ferengi. So, like, he's basically forgoing his roots. And instead he's like, you know what? I really enjoy engineering. I like math, science. I want to be in Starfleet, and he becomes the first Ferengi to join Starfleet. He's recommended highly by Captain Sisko, who's the commander of the Deep Space Nine space station. And, yeah, he really makes a good name for himself, and he's also, like, ironically somewhat friends with Sisko's son, Jake. And at first, they're just kids wandering around the promenade, like, causing a little bit of trouble, and then you watch them grow up during this whole series, and it's pretty neat. And one of the jokes too, the actor who plays Nog, his name is Aaron Eisenberg, and so when they reference starships later, the starship that Nog is originally, I think, stationed to, I think that's correct. Sorry if I misquote things from people who actually know what I'm talking about, but there's a star class of ship called the Eisenberg, and that's a reference to the actor who plays this character.
That's pretty cool.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, and there was one episode too that I still remember because it was a good episode. In one of his first missions, Nog ends up getting injured, and I think that he completely loses his leg, and he's given a prosthetic limb because, like, you know, in the 23rd century they should have the best stuff. But he doesn't understand that, I want to say the human characteristic, but the Ferengi characteristic, like, all, we're not all so different. Like, he's still getting phantom pains in his leg, even though it's not really there. And that bothers him so much that he, like, gets post-traumatic stress disorder from this injury. And he retreats into the holodeck. And there's a whole episode about him, like, getting over it. And the characters in the holodeck, like, he's been there so long that the holodeck kind of has artificial intelligence and starts remembering, hey, you've been here. I'm building off our shared memories. Like, I know why you're here. You shouldn't be here. And the characters in the holodeck start, like, pushing him out because they're like, you don't belong here. You've been here too long. Go live your life.
You need reality.
Yeah. So that's a really good episode. I forget which episode it is. I'm not going to look it up, though. You can Google it yourself. But... yeah, Nog is a great character. Like I said, second generation underdog, I think, is a great, great description of him. And of course, like, because we love Spider-Man, we love the underdogs. Yeah. So he's a great character. And in this issue that I'll probably talk about more later, he's doing his thing. So Nog is a good character, a good son to bring into our discussion.
One other thing I want to mention when it comes to Star Trek Deep Space Nine, weren't we in Vegas on... when we had breakfast at the one that was, they called it the Enterprise, but it was definitely not the Enterprise.
Yeah, it was definitely more like Quark's Bar than the Enterprise.
But. So that's my other Star Trek experience was in Vegas.
Yeah, it actually used to be called the Star Trek Experience. Yeah. They shut it down, but then they turned it to a, like, brunch space.
A dinner hall sort of thing, / timeshare or scam thing. So, yep. Fun times. Jared, what's next on your list?
The next one on my list was one I actually remembered... it was a very small portion of DC Comics' Future's End. If you remember that, they brought Batman Beyond back in time, and this and that happened, and all sorts of stuff happened. But I'm going to focus on Dick Grayson's daughter in Future's End. Her name was Elena Grayson. She did not have a mother. Well, she did, but they don't name her. That's right. She just materialized.
I mean, comic books, technically, that's true. They're just materializing comics.
Right. But this kind of happens in the Batman Beyond universe. So she is... So Dick Grayson's the mayor of Bloodhaven. And them two get invited by Bruce Wayne to the opening of the Wayne Family Center of Tomorrow, which is like the... to honor his parents, Bruce's parents and everything, and then rebuilding Neo Gotham. But they're exchanging stories as with Dick and Bruce about Robin and stuff like that, and he's talking about a new Robin coming into the fold who was, I think it was Duke Thomas, but I can't remember.
Yeah. How that we're looking at Laura for Star Trek, I'm looking the same for you for this one.
Yeah, I can't quite remember who that Robin was, but it's when the Joker came back, like in the show, the Return of the Joker in the Batman Beyond. Was it an animated movie? I can't remember.
I watched Batman Beyond as a kid, but I don't remember any of it really.
Yeah, so it's like the comic adaptation of that portion, but so. She takes over, so she goes into the Batcave and steals the Batman Beyond suit, and later becomes Batwoman, virtually. There wasn't much of her in Future's End, and I don't think she's really done anything since, if they've done anything with her in the Batman Beyond stuff. I haven't been reading it, but I always thought that was a cool little full circle thing, like the first Robin's daughter becomes Batwoman next to the new Batman. Yeah. You know, I thought that was a great, great thing. So I don't have many notes on her, but I just remembered that one and looked up a few things on that. But yeah, Barbara Gordon was the one who to convince Dick to let her keep going as Batwoman.
All right.
So
next one on my list is going to be a real cop out. Darth Vader's kids, Luke and Leia.
Ah, good one.
I mean, is it really though? I mean, it was just me walking around this and like, oh yeah, this will work. This will be dumb and easy. So. Yeah, they do a bunch of Star Wars comics still going on.
And who were their kids before Disney bought them?
So that's a complicated question, and you know that. Because it depends on what universe within that even, because they had so many expanded that contradict each other.
The main known ones.
I don't know.
Not Ben Solo, that's from Disney. Ben Skywalker was Luke and Mara Jade's. Then Leia and Han had Jason, Jaina, and Anakin.
Sure.
We'll stop there. I could go further, but this is your part, not mine.
Well, no, I mean, it's fine. I just know that people say, oh, you know, there's supposed, you know, no more continuity issues. Like, of course there are, because Disney's human and just retcon in general, it happens. But also, I don't think they realize how chaotic the Star Wars expanded universe was before Disney. Like, there were so many, none of it was actually connected to each other. Like, well, what about this book? Does that, well, that's countered by this one, because that, so that one never happens. That's not, so that's not canon, or this one isn't, like, it's such a mess. Going off.
Or just the way they portrayed clone troopers before the movies came out. Yeah. It's like, they were completely different.
Yeah. Someone asked me the other day at the store, like, I don't know how we got to it, but like the worst fandom, who's the worst fandom? And I said, without a doubt, Star Wars fans are the worst fandom of all.
I would agree. I absolutely love Star Wars. That's probably my favorite franchise, but I don't like the fans.
There's so much gatekeeping,
gatekeeping, and they're mean.
So much, measuring as well as, of knowledge.
Right. Yep.
And just... It's such a turnoff for the cat. Like, oh, I watch the movies. That's fine. Like, oh, well then, well, like, dude, come on, man.
Like what you like, dislike what you dislike, but don't gatekeep it and don't trash somebody for liking it.
Right.
And if somebody enjoyed it, let them enjoy it.
And don't trash the casuals.
Like, no. And be nice to the actors and everything.
Right. I mean, Hayden Christensen, you know? I mean, how long was he like, no, I'm not going anywhere near it because of the prequels? Like,
yeah.
And I mean, he came back for Obi-Wan.
And fans have been very accepting of him and everything like that. But I think even they've said it online, the ones that were kids when they were making the films are adults now. and remember those fondly. Right. So it's they're a lot more accepting than what people were.
Right. So, yeah, and I still think the newest trilogy will have that same thing where people that are our age when they came out, like, oh, well, it's just a copy, blah, blah, blah. But there are kids that watch it. Because the biggest thing, and this is really off topic, is Star Wars is not made for adults. Star Wars is a kid's property for kids, with the exception of Andor, which even then I...
Maybe even Rogue One.
Maybe
just because they kill off all the characters at the very end.
Which, I mean, Andor ties into that, so...
Right.
But, like, as a whole, Star Wars is made for kids
right.
to buy toys and buy merchandise. Now, adults can like it, sure.
Yeah.
But I don't want someone to say, oh, you're one of those Disney people, and how dare you? How are you a Disney adult, and blah, 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 and, but I love Star Wars. Like, no, it's the same thing, guys. It's a different kind of nerddom. It's the same thing. Like,
right.
You like it or you don't, and there are...
Yeah.
The uber nerds of both. Right. The bronies of both, I should say.
There you go.
So, but, I mean,
you might get some hate mail for that one.
But that's the closest comparison where
it is.
There's the diehards that contradict everything and
right.
argue about everything, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, Luke and Leia. Just because all the Star Wars stuff of everything. And the other one I want to mention is Wolverine. And his
Draken
or Dakin or Dakin, I don't know the actual pronunciation. It's Japanese. Yeah. I don't know. I've only read it. I've never heard it officially, so I don't know what the correct pronunciation is. So him and X-23, Laura Kinney.
Oh yeah,
they retconned where she is the daughter as well. Or not originally she was the clone, but then they did the Logan movie. Like, oh, the daughter. And they're like, oh, you know, it actually makes more sense to be the daughter instead of the clone. So
sure, I liked the clone myself, but the comics were really good when those first. Came out with her origin and stuff like that. I don't dislike the daughter, but I really liked those. So
honestly,
it doesn't retcon it, you know.
I mean, but honestly, it doesn't change the story any because
no, not
she
really.
Still killed her mom who was working in the Weapon X factory.
Right.
So it's still that connection to that person.
Oh, and then
I didn't know my father / original, whatever.
Yeah.
And just in cloning wise, it makes more sense just to say, oh, well, it's daughter because it was cloned, it'd be still the same. XY
right.
genes,
oh,
XY
yeah.
genes versus just the double X. Like
it, yeah, it's so. It is. It's fine. You right. know what I mean? It's I just liked those clone stories.
And the stories still work. I mean,
and they do. Yeah.
It's just like,
we thought it was a clone before we knew the truth.
It doesn't really change anything.
Not really.
So, but it does category. It does work for this category of children.
Yep.
So, I always like that dynamic too with, okay, you're a murderer. And so am I, but also you can murder more efficiently or we can equally do just as well. And it just, that's cool. So
yeah. Good father-daughter bonding time.
Yeah. And father-son.
And father-son. Yep.
Who's currently, as we're recording this, dead technically, I think, in the Wolverine series.
He'll be back.
Technically dead.
Yeah. I mean, it's comics. It is what it is. Sabretooth cut him up and wrote out happy birthday to Logan for Logan's birthday.
Oh, that's great.
But he wrote it in Dokken's body limbs.
Oh, that's great.
I mean, it's horrible, but...
It's horrible, but that's... Yeah.
It's very totally, same
yeah.
Yeah.
So, Laura, what is next on your list?
As we were naming our puppy, who you can hear barking away, Stanley, I was like, isn't there another character in the Marveldom named Stanley? And I Googled it. Stanley Osborne. At first, I had completely forgotten about him because he's a very forgettable character.
And
in most history, he's like 9 months old.
And just for clarification, that Stanley in our dog is Stan Lee.
Yeah, although I do keep running it together.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
And we just call him Stan for short also. But just like Peter Barker, we always call him Peter.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry.
Well, that's fine. But yeah, so I Googled this guy because I was like, Stanley Osborne, what is there to say about you really other than... Everything about Normie Osborn, because he's kind of the better, more interesting brother who's become the Red Goblin and tried to kill Aunt May for putting oatmeal raisin cookies in him that he thought were actually chocolate chips. But, yeah.
Which Josh can relate to that. I know Josh hates oatmeal raisin because he's like, I think it's chocolate chip. I bite it. I don't have a problem with it on concept, but I think it's my brain thinks it's chocolate, and it's not. It just makes me eat.
Yeah. Fair. Totally fair. But yeah, originally they thought that Stanley was going to be the son of Norman Osborn and Lily Hollister. So everyone was all a-Twitter about it because they thought that his blood was going to be this super, kind of a super soldier serum because it was, I guess at that time, Lily was a goblin of some sort. I forget which one she is.
There's so many.
I don't think she's the Goblin Queen.
There's so
but
many.
I think there's a Goblin Queen and there's a Queen Goblin and there's so many goblins.
There's so many goblins. Like there's so many Venom symbiotes. It's ridiculous. They open Pandora's box on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then there's the whole Spider-Verse, which unlocks all of those again.
And now there's a whole Venom-Verse even that they're doing.
Yeah, although I think that's dead again too.
I don't know.
I've fallen behind.
Are they flooding the market?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Never. Like there's too much, isn't there?
Too much, but it is flooded.
They would never flood the market. They would never find something that makes money, and then they'll make a million copies of it. Spider-Man, Batman.
And a new thing coming out is the symbiosis necrosis, because as you get the flesh-eating virus or whatever from too many symbiotes, that's what happens. But anyways, so poor Stanley, he has no idea what's going on, but everyone thinks that his blood is worth like millions of dollars because they think he's from Norman Osborn and Lily, who have both been exposed to goblin serum on some level. But then it turns out after he's born and he's thrown around by all these bad guys, like Dr. Octopus kidnaps him, someone else, the Chameleon kidnaps him. He's just thrown all over the place. But then finally Spider-Man gets a sample of his blood and realizes he's not really Norman's, he's Harry's, which I don't know how often this happens, which is really creepy, that apparently there's confusion about whether Norman or his son Harry slept with a woman. It's like, how many women have you guys shared? Like, that should not be the love triangle we're having in any situation. But I feel like the idea is to say that Norman is a monster. I hope that Harry's a little bit of a monster too. Let's not lie here. All the Osborns can
They're
be
not
a little
great people.
A little creepy all the time. But for the most part, I like to think that because Norman was so bad, it trickled down to Harry. But anyways, so eventually they figure out that Stanley is not actually Norman's son, but Harry's. But Harry, of course, takes care of him. Although I also think at one point they said that this was Harry's clone anyway. I'm not sure where the real Harry is. I don't think.
It's all
I
mess.
Think that the clone might be dead now, too. I don't even know what's going on, and I am trying to understand Spider-Man, I swear. But
comics are a mess, though.
Yeah. So anyways, the official canon that I've heard most recently is that Stanley is the son of Harry Osborn and Lily, although Lily, I think, is gone crazy, not taking care of her son. So it's, oh no, I'm blanking on her name. She's one of my favorite characters anymore.
Liz Allen.
Yeah, Liz Allen. Yeah, her.
I got it.
She's the one taking care of Stanley for the most part now. And it is awesome how every once in a while Normie kind of stands up for his little brother too. But yeah, so Stanley's still a young toddler infant in most issues that I've found. But he's less of a commodity now that everyone's decided, oh, he's just Harry's son. Even though I'm a little confused by that, because I would think at this point Harry still had the goblin serum at some point. Unless maybe because he's a clone and because like maybe it's watered down somehow.
It's all a mess.
But somehow once they found out, oh, he's only Harry's kid, now they don't want his blood so much. Which, good for him. Like, who wants to have people after your blood? So yeah, Stanley Osborn exists.
All right. Jared, do you have any quick ones left?
I can't think of the one's name, but Sinestro's daughter, who became a Green Lantern, Zornik Natu, or something like that, I think.
Maybe. That does remind me, though, there's a current series. So we had Super Sons. There's Sinister Sons going on right now.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Sinestro's son and
Luthor's? That doesn't sound right.
Or Lobo's kid, maybe?
Could be Crush.
I think that might be it.
Something like that. There's also, man, there's so many. The Fantastic Four kids, Wally West's kids, Jay and
the
Iris.
Son of General Zod.
Oh, Zod's kid.
And Sinestro's kid. That's the first Sinister Sons.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I have Nick Fury Jr., which is in the main 616 universe. So we have Nick Fury, the white Nick Fury, David Hasselhoff Nick Fury. Nick Fury Jr. is the Samuel L. Jackson Nick Fury.
Oh, that's great.
So they made Nick Fury Jr. So that was, probably 10 years ago. Like, oh, and this is and Nick Fury. Because the Ultimate Universe had the Sam Jackson analog. And then they're like, oh, we're going to modernize it. And we love that version, so we'll do that in here. And it's just, they're like, oh, it's his son that all of a sudden the Hasselhoff Fury is dead or off in space or who knows what.
He's and somewhere.
Now Nick Fury is the one that was in the Ultimate Universe and he's black now. And like, I see what you guys did there. You're doing the MCU and just trying to keep that similar
look. Why wouldn't you? It's Samuel L. Jackson as Nick Fury.
Fair.
That's perfect casting.
I'll take that.
Right?
That reminds me, we got some advertisement from Second Sight the other day. And it always makes me think of Nick Fury because there's some free comic book day or something special issue where he throws a bottle of Second Sight liquor at somebody. Yeah. And like that was the big selling point when we toured that winery. So, yeah, Second Sight and Nick Fury.
And the other one I want to put on my list or I want to mention briefly is the video game series The Last of Us. They did two games. Yeah. They did a Last of Us American Dreams comic book that was based in the universe of the game. So it's about Ellie, who is the adoptive daughter of Joel. So I figured that's worth mentioning. Yeah. Adoptive children work as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So any other...
All of our topics are very open to loose interpretation.
Yeah.
I honestly looked up a little bit more about Franklin Richards because our book club book is The Fantastic Four Life Story. And I was like, how much of this is what really happened to Franklin Richards? So I was looking up, basically, was he an only child? No. He had a younger daughter or a younger sibling, sister named, was it Valeria? Or just Val.
Oh, Val for short for something, yeah.
Yeah.
I just know Val, because
They say Val constantly in the comics, so maybe it is just Val.
No, I know that there's a full name, but I don't remember what it is, or I would butcher it, so. No sense of risking that.
I might be able to find it fast, but nope, not fast enough. Don't care. But, so Val is his little sister. But yeah, some things that happened in here were true, that he kind of got sent off by his parents because he had these psionic powers and he wasn't able to control them. And it was probably one of Reed's biggest failures that he couldn't help his son control his own powers. So he kept trying to like put him in the X-Men's care or like other places to try to help him find his powers or find a way to control them. And they mentioned that in one issue, well, I guess two issues, Fantastic Four 140 and 141, a character named Annihilus tried to unlock Franklin's...
Annihilus.
Yeah. Let's see. He was trying to steal Franklin's powers, and in the process, he accidentally, like, cracked him open like an egg, and Franklin's powers just, like, overwhelmed him and everyone around him. So Reed... They just said he shut him down. I don't know what all that entails, but apparently he was basically like in a coma for a while. And then when Ultron 7 attacked Earth, that awoke Franklin's powers. But luckily, the powers, because they cracked open again, just ended up defeating Ultron because they overwhelmed him. And that release of all this power brought Franklin back to normal for a while. And then I thought it was interesting because I watched the series that Scarlet Witch was in, WandaVision. And they brought that character Agatha Harkness into that. And apparently she used to be Franklin's babysitter. She used to be a good character, which I guess... it depends what side you're on, if she was a good character in WandaVision or not. But there's two sides to every story, you know? So apparently she used to basically be Franklin's babysitter. They also mentioned in the Wikipedia article I skimmed through that Herbie was his guardian for a while. I didn't catch what Herbie stood for, but we can all Google that.
It's the floating robot. I don't know.
Yeah. I've heard it a few times, but
it's not the car, the bug?
No.
No. Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
I need to be more careful. And then at one point, I guess Franklin aged himself, but he... once he was older, he realized how he could make himself young again and still control his powers. So that was kind of cool that he normalized himself. And I guess at one point he also joined the Power Pack and had the name Tattletail, which I'm sorry that I cut off there as I was scrolling through. I'm curious, why was he Tattletail? Was he like revealing the secrets of the whole group, the Power Pack, and getting them in trouble?
He's like Spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I didn't learn everything I really could have about Franklin, but just enough to know that, yeah, it was kind of similar, the things that really happened to him in the 616 universe versus this Life Story story. But yeah, I was always thrown off by Life Story since I don't know enough about the Fantastic Four. I was like, did this really happen? Did it go this way? Like,
but we'll talk about more of that soon.
Yep. So I'll hold myself back.
All right. So let's move on to the next segment of books, our favorite picks of the week from the last couple weeks, be it this week, last week, or the week before that. Jared, why don't you go first again?
No pressure.
Well, I'll go with Batman number 145, Dark Prisons Part 1. We start out with Joker and Batman in a prison cell,
After Joker Year 1.
Yeah, after Joker Year 1 and everything. So a lot's happening, but Failsafe's back, the robot Batman. I'm not going to give too many spoilers or anything. I'm not going to go into this, but this was a great first part to this story arc.
And the interaction between Failsafe and Jason Todd was very
great.
Well.
Yep, and Damian too.
Yeah.
The Riddler kind of gets his butt kicked. We'll go with
which is fair.
Yep. But I liked towards the end, one of Bruce's mentors shows up, the one who kind of helped him mold his mind into his mind being a weapon also.
Which they showed him in the Joker Year 1 stuff also.
Yep. So there's they're still going through the Batman's Renoir stuff. So there's some really good stuff here with Batman 145, still Chip Zdarsky. And there's also a Joker Revelations follow-up feature that was actually pretty fun. So I think this is one that people should really check out.
I'll go next. One of my picks of the week is actually the trade paperback of the Zdarsky run. Just came out this week as we're recording this. Oh, nice,
the Failsafe one.
Which is it collects Batman 125 through 130.
I'm sorry. Real quick, this just popped in my head. Whatever happened to Ghostmaker? Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He fell off and he was just gone. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah. I don't know.
I hope they bring him back. Some of that stuff was fun. It was like really stupid at first, but I'm like, this is great.
Right. But a longtime listener to the podcast will remember when this came out in single issues, Jared and I rant and raved about how he loved Batman flying through space on space debris. And that is in this volume here.
Oh, that was great.
Adrian will be picking this up. He came in today. he was like, should I get it? I was like, honestly, you have a heavy week of books. Wait a week. He's like, fair point. So, because as much as we talked up the series as they're coming out, he's like, I'm going to get the trade when it comes out just to see the ridiculousness and funness of it. So the trade of Chip Zdarsky's Batman Volume 1, subtitled Failsafe, finally came out. And like I said, we've talked about it since the whole beginning of Zdarsky's run.
Yeah, it's still being some of our picks.
And examples is today. So I have to say that this is one of my picks, just the trade coming out this week. So very well done. Laura, what is one of your picks this week?
The top one I figured I'd mention was Sons of Star Trek, since it inspired our talking point. It was number one, and some of the... Oh, an interesting thing, too. This one was drawn by... Oh, no, I forgot his name. His first name. Clayton. Clayton Cowles. And that guy also drew Helen of Windhorn, which you might mention later. I just thought it was interesting when we were talking about different things. I was like, this name is familiar. I read something else by them earlier. But anyway, sorry. A little slightly off topic. But this... The synopsis I give of this issue is that it's Groundhog Day, Deep Space Nine style. Like, the characters are all kidnapped by Q Jr., which might not mean anything. Yeah,
QJR.
Since not many people seem to be big Star Trek fans, Q was this, like, godlike entity that was always causing issues in... The Next Generation, and then Deep Space Nine, like any other Star Trek after that point, usually had some appearance of the Q. They're actually an entire race, but usually, oh no, I'm forgetting, John DeLancey, I think, is the actor who plays Q. Like, he's one of my favorite characters, so he pops out, even though I forget his name.
Was he the one that was in Stargate also? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. That guy. Okay, I know the face.
Yep, because I'd make a lot of comments about, oh, he should just snap and make all these things happen.
Because he was Woolsey. Oh. And,
no.
Or no.
Woolsey was also in Voyager, but he was the emergency...
What was his name in Stargate, though?
I don't know. He was some bad guy who initially was just a government agent guy, but then, or maybe not even government agent, but politician, and then eventually gets taken over by a Gold. Okay. But I don't think he's a Gold for long. I think that he gets sniped.
I'll look it up. I forget.
But yeah, like, John DeLancey's a great character. Like, anything he does is pretty awesome. But anyways, so his son, which I don't know how they have children, but let's not get into that. But so this, the Q Jr. in this series kidnaps basically Jake Sisko, Nog, Alexander, let's see, Roz Henninki, who is actually Worf's son, who I'd forgotten about until this issue. I was like, oh yeah, he did have some brat running around for a little while. But yeah, so those three main characters are put into this alternate universe, and they don't behave by the rules that Q sets forth. So they're doomed to repeat the same mistakes. And you go through one run, and at the end of the issue, they're like, nope, you didn't do it right. Try again. So I'm wondering how many issues they're going to keep replaying this, what Q's looking for their end game to be, and we'll all find out together if we stick with it. So go out and get Sons of Star Trek number one. And it was polls only, so this is also an example of you need to pre-order stuff.
Pre-order. Or at least if you miss the pre-order and hear about it, then order it, because...
Get in there.
And order the series ongoing, because there's no guarantee we'll have it on the shelf for more issues after that.
Yep. So yeah, I really lucked out that you brought home that one issue where I never would have known it existed.
I tried to help.
We would have had no talking topic.
Potentially. We would have had something.
But we would have made up something else.
Anyway, Jared, let's do one other pick if you got one.
Okay, yeah, I'll do a quick one. Star Wars 44, actually. I haven't picked a Star Wars title in a long time, but this one was actually pretty good. So in the previous issues, I can't remember exactly where, when, stuff like that. Lobot, who was the human cyborg person of Lando's on Cloud City, the bald one with the gray headpiece, his neural implants began to fail him, and so Lando took him to Jabba, where a droid was there that Lando knew, and to make sure that droid would help Lobot, he would give Jabba the Hutt secrets and stuff like that, and so he revealed to the Rebel Alliance that he was doing that, and he was giving sensitive secrets to Jabba. So now we're starting with the trial of Lando Calrissian, part one. So this is still set between Empire and Return of the Jedi, and we get some great stuff with Lando in a cell with Lobot talking about why he saved him, why he did that, you know, and Lobot's calling him selfish, and, you know, there's a lot of great dialogue in this book. It was kind of dialogue, not super heavy, but heavy enough to, you know, it's a good read, but they go to a planet and start to have a trial with judges and stuff, and I will stop there because I don't want to give any spoilers on the end of it if you haven't read it yet, but it kind of leaves a good cliffhanger for their next episode or next issue. So good stuff. Trial of Lando Calrissian in Star Wars number 44.
All right. My other pick, I don't know, well, before I say it, was this one of your picks?
No, but I did intend to read it at some point.
Okay.
I hear it's good.
So my other pick then, and the reason why you may have figured out already why she intends to read it, is Spider-Man. The Spectacular Spider-Man number one. You may remember Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2. That's when Peter and Miles first met each other. It was in the first one, or Peter went to the Ultimate Universe. The second one was not nearly as good, but it was okay. But this one is Peter Miles. They say, hey, we're both Spider-Mans. We should have a weekly like touch base with each other, and like not as Spider-Mans, but as Peter Parker and Miles Morales, like make sure we're grounded and just accountability to each other and everything.
Give and more it, chance for the bad guys to learn who they are.
I mean, just or for them to re-strategize and make sure they're on the right game plan and everything. But has Peter Miles go to a coffee shop where it's near Empire State University. So Peter runs into people he knows. Then Miles turns out Miles finds people there that he knows as well. And it jumps back and forth between them meeting people as in their casual clothes versus them fighting the Jackal, Miles Warren, as the Spider-Men's. And it was just really fun, the dynamic between the two of them and everything. And then there's definitely something sinister going on in the background of the building, too. And
yeah, if Miles Warren is there, sinister.
Yeah, it's just, but not the Sinister Six. So.
No, that's a different issue.
Yes. But yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if it's because I don't like what they're doing in Amazing Spider-Man, or it's just this is just really good, but like this was really good, and I enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to more of it. So, Spectacular Spider-Man number one. Definitely check it out. They even have short boxes that are that same cover that they made in short boxes, which we have one of them ourselves because Spider-Man.
Because sometimes it's easier to organize things that way. Although I'm discovering they make a lot of boxes for like really short series that have like 5 issues. Yeah. And I'm like, well, what else do I put in this box then? It's not that short.
More Spider-Man.
Yeah, I admit I have all the Spider-Man. Well, not all, but a like lot of them. 95% probably at this point. But it's still like, well, what? Which other one in particular should I put in there?
So, yeah. And what is your other pick of the week?
I think I'm going to go with Amazing Spider-Man number 45, since you vaguely mentioned it there and said that it wasn't really your favorite. And I can understand why.
Except I think this was the one that came out recently that has nothing to do with, it was after Gang War, correct?
Yep.
Okay,
yeah,
so
it's kind of the wrap-up from, it's not even a wrap-up, like
its own
reset.
Yeah. And the art is not by John Romita Jr., which makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though I think his initials were on the cover.
He did do the cover, but he did not do interiors.
But he contributed to the cover. There were a whole bunch of initials there.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't know who really did it. Because, yeah, it says J.R.J.R., S. Hanna, and Minos, I think.
Let's say maybe.
Minyes.
Maybe on the inside it'll say.
Yeah, on the outside it says, too. I just.
More.
The way the guy wrote his Y, it doesn't look like a Y. It looks like an X with another line underneath.
But luckily, anyways, do not judge this book by the cover because the interior is not by John Romita Jr.
The cover's not bad either. Like, that one doesn't bother
me. It's fine, but it's still more John Romita Jr. And I think our audience knows my feelings on him.
Yeah. We do trash him quite a bit.
You have feelings.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so
if
anyways.
If he made better art, we wouldn't trash him.
There are some fans of him, and his early stuff was fine, but we digress.
It's just a little blocky. But this is a good jumping on point, I'd say, because after the gang war, like, this is kind of a chop. Like, they're not really referring to anything from the gang war, except maybe Jackpot Mary Jane is in this, and you might not know why she's a superhero unless you've read this other stuff, but you'll figure it out. And besides, like, every character who touches Spider-Man eventually gets their own superpowers somehow. Like, it has to do with the radioactive spider bite, I guess. But anyway, so we discover at this point, I guess I hadn't thought about it, but Ravencroft's been rebuilt. I forget how long ago it's been that it burned down. They rebuilt it. I think they destroyed it again, rebuilt it. It just always comes back for more. And it turns out, I didn't realize this either. Like, there were so many things in this issue that I was like, oh, yeah, when did that happen? There's a lot
that I didn't know that was happening either.
So Aunt Anna, Mary Jane Watson's aunt, is actually in Ravencroft because she, at some point, she was diagnosed with dementia. And so she took some Krakoan medication to help her with the dementia. But then she got Krakoan derangement syndrome from that and got even worse.
Which,
so,
to follow all of that stuff, you have to read a whole bunch of the X-Men stuff that's been going on. And it's a mess if you're just trying to get into it. Just so, for me, it was just take it as face value and just keep reading. Because it's a lot to, if you try to dig into it.
Yeah, I loved how they even abbreviated it as KDS, Krakoan Derangement Syndrome. Like, you would just know. Like, it's one of those common acronyms.
Obviously, you know what that acronym is.
Yeah, like, PTSD, which I always screw up anyway. But anyway, so yeah, we discover that Aunt Anna was locked up in Ravencroft, and like she, at first, she's causing all this trouble. Like she's not a model patient. She's angry with people and telling them to like essentially go to hell, that sort of thing.
I'll rip your face off and I'll eat it and blah, 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 blah. Crazy.
Yeah. And then, let's see. Yeah, I think it's not too much of a spoiler to say that essentially Spider-Man breaks into Ravencroft and has this experimental cure and goes ahead and injects her with it. And everyone's like, well, what happened that all of a sudden you're all better? But yeah, we'll review your case with the board and we'll try to get you out somehow. And yeah, that part was interesting.
But the way you find out where the cure is discovered was cool, because it's through Norman and Oscorp. And that's good Norman now, too. He's not Goblin Serum. He's still truly a good guy right now.
Yeah, I am so far behind on Spider-Man. I've basically missed this entire run where Norman's a good guy, and I'm still like, there's got to be a catch.
Right.
Something's coming.
So
it's looming.
To recap, what happened to Norman, Sin Eater ate all the sins, and he became a good guy, and then that's what he's been doing since. So
okay.
That's been...
I guess I did know that. Right.
I'm just saying...
Okay.
Yeah, and they've gone more nuances than that, but that's the Cliff Notes version of what's happened, how Norman is not evil.
And he's a gold goblin.
He's the golden goblin.
Yeah, two other little tidbits that came up in this that I assume are going to be important later. Kurt Connors is shown for a snippet out at Oscorp, and he's protecting the Living Brain, who is in a digital clean room. And it was great. Like, Kurt walks into the room, and there's some guy, like, showing another coworker pictures of his like kid's birthday or something. And Kurt freaks out and he's like, what are you doing? Why do you have your cell phone in this room? And the guy's like, I'm in airplane mode. I'm just showing off these pictures. It's fine.
It's not fine.
Kurt's like, pan the camera over to the Living Brain. Do you not realize what's in this room? Like, why it's a clean digital room?
Which is a fair response, really. Yeah. I mean, protocols are there for a reason, folks.
Yeah. Yeah. We have standards for a reason, says the ex-quality control person. Although I'm trying to remember, Living Brain, was that? Does that have to do with Doc Ock or Reed Richards?
I don't know. It makes me
get vibes of them, but I can't remember.
I was thinking Kree, actually, even.
Okay.
But that might have been something else, though.
Yeah. Who was the one in, like, Superior, where Doc Ock put his brain into the
living robot or something? Like,
I thought he was the Living Brain,
too. I don't know. Maybe.
Living something.
Because he's always going war click.
Yeah, like, yeah, that one. Would you like a tasty beverage?
Yeah.
I thought that was Living Brain, too, but that doesn't exactly make sense. Regardless. So, we'll Google Living Brain later. The other character who's also in Ravencroft that surprised the heck out of me... Well, it didn't surprise me that Flint Marko / Sandman was in there, but they gave him a new name, William Baker.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
I've never heard Sandman called William Baker before, so I'm tempted to look that up and see when did that start. Is this the beginning of that? But he seems to be a pretty pivotal character here, and I don't think Aunt Anna had any interactions with him, although it was cute when Anna would be like, hey guys, like she was friendly with all the bad guys in Ravencroft. I'm like, she's being way too nice to these guys. She's trying to be Aunt May when she's Aunt Anna. But yeah, Flint is definitely the catalyst of something going on in the next story arc. Like, it's going to be important that he's there in Ravencroft, and he knows more than he's letting on. And Peter Parker is there visiting Aunt Anna, and he comes across Flint Marko. And he's like, hey, I know you. Like, I'm glad you're in here getting some help. And, of course, he mentions Spider-Man, and, like, Flint kind of snaps for a minute. And then William Baker takes over. It's almost a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of thing, where William Baker's the more level-headed one. But, yeah, so he's in Ravencroft just waiting to break down, I'd say.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Amazing Spider-Man number 45, obviously you need to love Spider-Man, so you need to read this.
And I want to do one last quick mention. Thundercats number 2. Number 1 was really good. Number 2 was really good. And I'm not even a Thundercats diehard, but I really enjoyed it. So check that one out too. So moving on, let's go to our book club book of the week, which is Fantastic Four Life Story. But if you don't want spoilers on this, we'll get prepared for our next episode. Jared, what are we reading next time?
The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Saturday morning cartoon.
Yeah.
I wanted to say animated. I can't remember
exactly the title. Exactly. I know what the cover is.
And I touched it today, too. I went in and worked at the store for a couple hours, and I moved it.
It is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Saturday Morning Adventures, Volume 1.
There we go.
So yeah, that's what we'll
be reading. Why did we pick that?
Because St. Patrick's Day is this coming weekend as we're recording this.
And they're green.
And they're green. And we are basic. And that's, we're like, oh, yep. Green, cool, St. Patrick's Day. Let's go with
that. That works.
So yeah.
Green Turtle Day.
Yeah. So, Fantastic Four Life Story. I had read this in single issues. Have either of you read this before?
No.
This was my first.
What are your guys' thoughts on Fantastic Four, the life story?
I enjoyed it. For the most part.
It
did have Spider-Man in it. Like twice, I think.
Once three in the red... if you count Ultimate.
Oh, yeah.
Miles was at the end.
Yep.
So, yeah. One as Peter in the black suit, then Peter in the red suit, and then Miles.
And also the black suit.
And also the black and red suit. Yeah, we read the Spider-Man Life Story before, which was, you know, each issue was a different decade. This one was similar to that, where it was each issue was a different decade. However, I believe in Spider-Man, each issue was like one point in time.
Yeah.
Versus this is each issue is one decade.
Right. There are times it may jump. 1961, 64, 67. It may jump
a couple years for the whole story. And I think that worked out really well
with the story that they told. Yes.
Yeah, and they also had a different narrator for each decade.
Which I did enjoy.
So
yeah.
It took me a second to figure out who they were, but that was kind of nice too. That like at first you're not sure who's speaking, and then you're like, oh, this is Johnny. Oh, this is Ben. Okay.
Right. Because the first one was Reed, because he's the one that witnessed Galactus and everything. Yep. Second one was the Invisible Woman.
Yeah.
Sue Storm, which I liked how they did her panels because they're a little opaque also.
Yeah.
Translucent.
Thank you. Which like that's fun with that.
Yeah, I like that too.
Issue 3, I believe it was Johnny, because it has the little fire symbols on every
That
once
one
in a while.
Is easier to figure out.
I think four was Ben.
Yeah, I think so too. Five? Unless he was 5.
No, he was 4.
4 was definitely Ben, because it even has like an orange blocky style around it.
Okay, then 5 was probably Franklin?
I believe so. 5. I was thinking Franklin.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't write this in my notes.
Yeah.
Yep, it was Franklin.
Yeah, at the end I kind of petered off.
And then the final one, number 6, who was the narrator of that one? I just read it.
Oh. Yeah, you did just read it, like 20 minutes ago.
Not 20 minutes. We've been recording for over an hour. Was there a narrator for the final? Yeah.
I think it was Reed. Oh, was it
Doom or Reed?
I think it was Reed again.
It was Reed again because he was comatose Reed. And trying to
bring himself out.
And just talk to the outside world and help save the world from Doom. So yeah, overall, I mean, I like the Spider-Man one better. I think it set the pacing for everything, and I think it worked really well. Versus this one, Spider-Man, you focus on Spider-Man. This one, you have to focus on the whole family, so that's more characters you play around with and everything.
But I liked this, like, so they were telling I don't remember exactly when Galactus came in, 40 years from the time Reed finds him, something like that, 50 years.
Close.
Well, because the first issue was
1961.
60s, and there was issue 5 when Galactus showed up.
Right.
So that's another 50 years. So
So early 2000s, 2000.
It was 2000s, because the final volume was the 2010s.
You're right. So it was basically Reed neglecting his family.
So roughly 40 years.
Yeah.
To make sure the Earth is prepared for Galactus. And when Silver Surfer came in and just blew up all of his defenses, like, in like 2 seconds, it's like, Reed spent his whole life doing that for nothing.
Right. Then no matter what you do, it's not going to be enough.
Right.
Which, I mean, it is one of those like, oh, they keep building this, and then throw away. But
it fit.
It fit pretty well.
Really well.
Especially the creative genius that is Reed. Like, yeah. Oh, he would be obsessive and he would right. be neglectful.
Like
that
everything
point,
too. Was, and not, yeah, he was neglectful with his family and everything, but he kind of had good reason. He was trying to save the world from being annihilated.
Right.
You know, which is one of those sacrifices that most people wouldn't make.
To me, that reminds me a lot of when we read it a few months ago, The Last Flight Out.
Yeah.
That book, whereas the super genius trying to save the world, like, oh, I'm neglecting the family to try to save the world. I think this did it better than that one did.
I think so, too.
Mostly because that one just skimmed over this time versus this, yeah. You lived through it a little bit better.
You lived through it a little bit more, and they're established characters that we know. Right. So we can already... We already know
there that. Are some assumptions yeah. that you make about the characters right. and everything. Now, there are some things, like you said, Laura, earlier, how we have Franklin, but we have no Val. Like, they only right. have one yep. kid.
Which, when Johnny dies, which, yeah, I mean, that was pretty sad. I mean, that was yeah. good.
They did that in comics, too.
Oh, yeah. Briefly. But this one did remember. It very good.
Yeah, they killed Johnny, and then they did Future Foundation. That's when Spider-Man joined the Fantastic Four yep. Future Foundation.
Oh.
It was when Johnny was dead.
I've been meaning to read that for a long time.
And I do like the end of this when the Fantastic Four is mostly dead or old and too retired. And you see Ben and Sue in their Future Foundation costumes,
yeah.
the white and black with the
okay. hexagons. Okay, I didn't realize that's what was.
That's from
okay.
the Future Foundation that they did in the comics, which is a fun little thing they did, I thought.
Yeah, another part of this that stuck out to me, I never thought about Sue kind of giving up on their marriage. Did that ever happen in the normal storyline?
I don't know. I know there was times, at least there's many times she has flirted, and Namor has flirted more with her, so they've hinted that they might have dated briefly, but it was definitely not like they got divorced, I don't think.
Yeah, because if I remember correctly, in this alternate story, she does get divorced.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. And I never thought about that. Like, I'd never seen the flirtation or anything. Like, I always thought that they were rock solid and together. But I liked her decade where she described herself as feeling invisible for other reasons than just, like, that's
without,
her superpower.
Without even using her power. Just yeah. when you're standing next to a superstar that is Reed, like, just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You get drowned out.
Yeah. And especially being a woman in that era, because it was the 60s as well, when women's rights and racial rights, all those things were high priority to a lot of, well, mm-hmm. all whites and people of who aren't white. Sorry, I said that wrong. Women and non-whites were like, we want to have a voice, so we need to get this all together. And she wanted to be part of all those protests But she also had to completely be a mom because Reed was completely ignoring all of his other duties.
And just doing some quick Googling, at one point Namor did abduct Sue and attempt to persuade her to be his queen. So there has always been an infatuation in the 616 universe as well.
Cool.
It is definitely... a little bit of whiplash of what little I do know from Fantastic Four and what happens in this. Like, wait, what? That's...
Something doesn't feel right, but...
And they hint at things. Like, they hint at, okay, well, so Franklin grows up and he marries T'Challa's sister. But they don't actually name her as Shuri, I don't think.
Okay,
Shuri
yeah, I
was
didn't
later
notice...
on. Shuri's Shuri... name does pop up later on, but I thought it was, like, T'Challa's kid. Not
no, they said Uncle T'Challa and my
oh maybe it's so, maybe it's
and,
yeah so
and
it's
Franklin's
some,
kid
some sibling of T'Challa
right.
married Franklin
correct
which I thought he only had one sister
I
so
thought
that makes
so
me
too,
think it's
but,
Shuri but this is an alternate universe
right
so.
And I swear they gave a different name for
they did
her but it wasn't Shuri though because yeah. They specifically said when they had the final fight against the Doom bots Shuri is the Black Panther which when this came out, they probably did that probably 5 years prior to that in the main 616 where Shuri was the Black Panther. Because it has the standard Black Panther costume plus like fur on it, fur accents, which is kind of weird, but whatever. It's your own costume. Do what you want.
Panthers can be furry.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't recognize the name that they use though for his wife, but.
Zawanda.
Zawandi. Either way,
that.
I don't know who that is. Unless that's a Wakandan, like, pet name, like, oh, honey, sort of thing.
No, it's the priestess that was marrying them said the name.
Okay.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know who that character is. But, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's the sibling to T'Challa, I believe. Yes. So yeah, like, that was weird. But I was okay with the having certain heroes be at certain ages. Like,
right.
Carol Danvers, she was not in the age of the Fantastic Four.
Right.
She was much younger. She was in the age of Miles and Riri Williams and Shuri.
After the Avengers, when Steve Rogers and Tony Stark were older, you know.
Which I think that's fun, where they're playing with basically if the comic book characters were in their prime age when the first comic books came out. So, okay, well, Riri Williams is a newer character, so of course she was younger.
Yep.
Miles Morales is a younger character, so of course he's younger. Like, that works pretty. That's fun how they did that balance of the old and the new Avengers for that.
Yep.
It did throw me the couple times when they showed Reed like waking up, as if when he fell asleep he forgot to de-age himself. Like he gave himself a facelift.
Right. Yeah.
And then he'd wake up and like reabsorb into his what we're used to. But yeah, when he was super old, when he was unconscious,
all white, and then he just remolds his face to be the classic with the white sideburns and black hair on top. Which I knew he could shapeshift his or like elongate his body. I didn't know he could like full on shapeshift, because that's changing your
hair color.
Right. Like, okay, you can change your skin with your abilities, sure. But changing the hair color too, that's new.
Maybe he has one hair that's still colored. And he can make that one.
Yeah. It's a major comb over.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, there's a lot in this that I don't think we need to go in the weeds everything.
No, not at all.
Except we should mention that there are two references also to the Beatles. And I like that part.
Laura likes the Beatles.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, especially, that's fine. I think, who was it? I want to say it was Johnny was kind of being loose and like hanging out with everybody. He went to a bed-in that John and Yoko put on. At first, I didn't even recognize them, but then I saw it said like, make love, not war, or bed peace, something. I forget what the sign is above them, but it's in there, and that's the marker that's what that was.
Right.
But he's like playing his guitar, hanging out with the Beatles.
But I like the overall growth of all the characters.
Yeah.
I mean, with the exception of Reed. Reed didn't really grow until the end, where he's like, I need to own up and
I need to be. I want to be a family man
I
now.
I need to be present, because the world, I failed. The world is ending. I need to enjoy the whole family together. Like, that was really fun when they're at the bar together and everything.
Yep.
Johnny, how he sacrificed himself. Like, to go out, the party animal, but party tricks sometimes have really good abilities, and how he saves New York City from a nuclear bomb by absorbing it and everything. That was cool, too.
Yeah.
Overall rating, then. 1 to 5, 1 being off of 5 being great. Laura, what would you rate Fantastic Four Life Story? It does have Spider-Man in it.
Yeah, I do think I bumped it up a little bit. At first, earlier, I was like, 3, but Spider-Man and the Beatles, I think, bump it up to a 4.
All right.
So I'll give it a 4.
Jared, what would you rate it?
I would probably go a 4 also.
Because you love the Beatles.
I enjoy this. Yes, it's the Beatles and Spider-Man. No, I enjoyed this all the way through. I thought it was a great multi-decade long story that they did really well. I don't know if it's something that I could say, you've never read the Fantastic Four, here, read this.
I would say if you read the Spider-Man Life Story and liked that format of storytelling, this works really well.
Yeah.
Because I want them to do more within that, because, Spider-Man is in this, and I believe it's the same universe as the Spider-Man Life Story. There's no real way to tell for sure.
Right.
Other than if we go back and read the Life Story and see when did they put him in the black suit and in the red suit, then we might be able to tell some comparison between the two.
Yeah, I actually don't think I ever finished Life Story. I think that was one of the issues or the episodes you did without me.
Off week?
That could have been.
Yeah, I think that was back in the day with Adrian when he was here.
I enjoyed this.
That one ended sad with death, so.
Yeah, yeah. I remember I read a couple of the issues, and I didn't like how disjointed it felt, though, so I wasn't interested enough to stick with it. But I keep hearing good things about it, so I need to go back.
I think I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5 also. Again,
they're solid.
The storytelling that they use, it's very long-winded and wordy.
Yes.
But the way
I, but it's good.
It's good. I love the how they had different characters give the narration of like from their perspective of everything as it went. I think that was a fun narrative story. Like, yeah, the first one you can't tell because it just looks like standard editorial blocking, but that's Reed Richards. He doesn't have a special ability. Yeah. But once you start playing with that format, like, oh, well, this one's clearish. This one has the orange. This one has blocky. Like,
I'm glad they waited till for Ben Grimm to go on fourth, too, because I think if he would have been like first or second those first two decades, I think it would have been just angry rants.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He had a lot of growth. Accepting
a lot of issues still, but we got some personal thoughts.
Well, I'm just growth with him. Like, he's like, okay, I can still find love even though I'm this rock monster. Like, he finally agreed to, like, okay.
The blind date, that was funny.
Yeah, and his bartender, like, oh, some people have a therapist. I have a bartender.
Yeah.
And, like, I can relate to that. Not as a bartender, but as people that always confess their stuff to me, like, sometimes it's fine, sometimes, like, guys, come on. But that's neither here nor there.
And I did love with Ben, you would expect him to really take things out on Reed, and he does to some extent. But even as angry as he is at Reed for turning him into a monster, he's still by Reed 100% of the time. Like, even when Sue leaves,
he's like, okay.
Grimm is the one who's like his nursemaid, like making sure he's good, making sure he eats.
Yeah, he's like, I may not always agree with you, but I see the bigger picture that you're trying to save the world, and you need someone to keep you alive, and that's me. So
he's like his Alfred for a bit.
His reluctant Alfred.
At first I heard his rock instead of his reluctant.
that too. He was his rock as well.
His rock Alfred.
Yeah. Rockford. Moving on to the segment that I forgot to warn Jared about. That is Heroes of the Week, comic book or otherwise. I will go first, partially because of the noise, as aforementioned in the beginning of the dog barking of Stan Lee barking. And now it sounds like Peter.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can hear Peter
Peter's
too
getting
now.
Into the action now too. My hero is going to be our neighbor Mary, who's walking her dog Sally, and they happen to befriend Stan, our dog Stan Lee, and we're able to track them in the backyard, and she was in contact with Deb's dogs and was able to help get that all set up. So thank you for helping rescue this dog. We mentioned it briefly on Facebook, but on our personal pages, but a lot of our listeners probably aren't friends with us on Facebook. But
aren't, find us and try.
I mean, maybe. We'll see. but Stan apparently they've been trying to catch him since September of last year. So he's been out in the wild for quite a while, but he was getting fed and he survived the winters and we captured him and he lives with us and he's very happy and cuddly now. So
contrary to what he's saying right now, because we're not cuddling him, he's upset.
He's crying because he can hear us and we're not there with him. So that's my best guess.
I do wonder how much he hears us. Probably maybe we enough. Do. We do definitely need to soundproof this some more based on what we can hear.
Or we should just, hopefully next time he'll be more house trained. He'll be less crying. We'll see what happens. Yeah. But Laura, who is your hero of the week, comic book or otherwise?
I was going to steal a page from Adrian and kind of pick multiple heroes and also follow a fast of what you said. I was going to pick all of the Deb's Dogs associates, basically.
The organization Deb's Dogs, which is a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. Pet rescue.
Yep. Yeah, because they rescue pets. They actually, it was through the website Nextdoor that they'd posted that this dog, we've been calling him Casper for a while too, because he was a ghost. They go to try to find him and he'd disappear. But on the post there, they mentioned how much the Deb's Dogs people, particularly Heather and Jody, I think were the two main people we dealt with. They've been putting so much of their personal time and investment and money into trying to track our current Stan Lee. They set up a trap. They had cameras. Like, that impressed
like
me.
Like, the
when
game
she said,
cameras and stuff.
They had cameras so they could see that he would come near, but he'd never come in the trap because he'd see other animals go in and get caught. I forget if that actually happened, but they were afraid of that. Or every time the trap got set off, it was someone else, and they had to come out, let out whatever animal it was in there, reset it up for poor Stanley, and then he never got caught that way. And instead, he ended up following Sally, the other dog, in the neighborhood, because he's like, you seemed really awesome, and I just love you.
Yeah, and when we trapped him in their fence before he actually caught him. He was getting tired, and Sally was laying down. She's an older dog. She's 12 or 13. Big Lab, and he actually sat down on her front paws, like leaned against her, and our neighbor, Mary,
yeah,
she's like, "Holy crap, that's like," she took a picture of it, and I was like, "Good," because I have my phone at home because I wasn't playing, I was just walking Peter,
yeah,
and yeah, he laid down on her front paws, like leaned against her, like, "Oh,
I'm so tired," yeah. And then when we finally got him, he was also like, "Oh, they pumped me full of drugs and made sure I didn't have worms or fleas or anything. And like, it's been a long day. Can I just sleep here with you guys?" And now he's all energetic again, as you can hear.
And very loud and misses us oh so dearly.
Yep. We're going to have to run him around real bad tonight.
Yep. So, Jared, we bought you as much time as we could.
I'm still struggling here. I'm going to go with...
you have a doctor's visit next week?
That's what I was thinking. I'm going to go with my mom because she's going to take me to that doctor's
appointment. There you go.
Moms are always a good default.
It's good to, especially when you're under any influence of anesthesia or
anything. No, I have anesthesia, so I can't.
So it'd be good. It's good to have a driver for
you. They won't do the procedure if I don't have somebody there with me. So
that's good on them.
Yeah. Very safe.
Yeah. So with that, everybody, thank you for listening to our podcast. Like you said, hopefully next time there'll be a little less dog background noise. I don't know how much is going to come through the recording. I'll see what I can, but I'm also lazy, and I think it's funny, and it's a good story because we rescued a new doggo.
Yep.
So with that, barring any complications, we're going to be back in 2 weeks. I said that last time, so we'll see what happens. But thank you for listening.
Give or take a week.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you all next time. That's funny that Peter started barking too.
There's probably a squirrel out there.
Probably. Or he's just barking at Stanley right now.
Nah.